So last week we did Kuflamet tests, as if Aleph Beis and Gimel. Aleph Beis are the general outlines of Avodah Zarah, and then Gimel discusses the idea of Takrovas Avodah Zarah. So Takrovas Avodah Zarah is unique in that the things that come from Takrovas Avodah Zarah can never be batal. I mean, Avodah Zarah, even the idol itself, could be nullified. It could even be nullified by neglect. As the non-Jews leave town and leave the idols behind, so it seems like it shouldn't be, shouldn't have a din of avodah zarah anymore. I'm just thinking maybe I don't know if anybody discusses going to these minka and temples and stuff in South America or Central America. Those
Inca,
are
Inca.
Inca, Inca, right? Inca, Maya, and there's someone else also, right? Not minka.
Those
are the three. Okay. So how does that play into this? I mean, those people left. There was a Avodah Zarah there, and they somehow are gone now. So how does that play into visiting them? I'm not sure. We'll have to, the Greeks, ancient Greeks, ancient Romans. So does that still qualify as a Avodah Zarah or not? I'll look into it maybe for future weeks. But for this week, we're dealing with the multi-million-dollar issue of Takrovas Avodah Zarah. That Takrovas Avodah Zarah doesn't have the ability to be batal because it was used, as we explained last week. Right? It's used, so it's not subject to batala once it's already used. That seems to be what the I think that seems to be what the Taz explained. Let's look that up quickly.
Normally, it's a difficult concept because normally. Something the way our concept is that something's offered up, it's consumed, and therefore you wouldn't even have the option of using it again.
Usually,
at least a carbon,
it's already gone. Well, yeah. Not necessarily because our carbonos, even if it's offered, so then the carbon itself is now kadosh. I mean, the animal's not necessarily put on the mizbeach. But well, right. So that's a little different. Because we put the blood on the mizbeach, and then the animal is kept off the mizbeach and kept separate. But there are things that are put on the mizbeach and then they're eaten. Bikurim. There are things that are put on and then we take off and eat from, which is actually part of the issue here. So why is that? Because. Usually it's batal. Usually something would become batal because people don't care about it anymore. But by the mere fact that that was makriv, the mere fact that that was brought, demonstrates that it has chashivas. So therefore it doesn't have the ability to lose its chashivas anymore. So the Gemara, in its discussion of these things, uses two examples of things that would be disqualified because of takrovas avodah zarah. One of which seems to get a lot more attention than the other one. One of which is if you leave a thing of grapes on a mizbeach, so that's going to qualify as being takrovas avodah zarah, that the Gemara says. And then the Gemara also has this example of a stick. Right? If you break a stick in front of an avodah zarah that requires stick usage, not necessarily breaking the stick, but stick usage, so that's going to qualify as being takrovas avodah zarah. That's what the Gemara says. So why is that? How is that? How does one then regulate what is considered takrovas avodah zarah and what's not? So there are three different parameters to keep in mind. So one parameter is that the avoda for that particular avodah zarah? That avodah zarah could sometimes have particular avodas to it, right? So does that whatever you're doing, does it have anything to do with that avodah zarah? That's issue one to keep in mind. Although it seems actually that might be the least relevant issue. But does that avodah zarah care about the avodah that you're doing? The second section would be, for those listening online, I put air quotes around the word care. the second issue would be Is that avoda recognized by Torah as being an avoda? How does Torah recognize it as being an avoda? Well, is it something that's done in the Beis Hamikdash? Meaning, are we taking something that we normally do in terms of our avoda and transposing that onto avoda for a avoda zara? That's issue number two. And then issue number three is the question that there are these four avodas that are out there, that regardless of whether they are specific for that avodah zarah or not, they're going to qualify as being avodah zarah, right? So those four are shechita, hakrava, nisuch, and shtachavia, and bowing, right? So those four things are considered universal avodah zarahs. So how does that shake out? So Rashi is quoted in the Beis Yosef, and Rashi really gives a different opinion than the Rush. And the Rush is not quoted in the Beis Yosef, that's because the Rush is quoted in the Tur. And the way it's quoted in the Tur, that's the way it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch as well. So, or maybe with a slight difference or two. So maybe we'll just read the Tur again, go back to the Shulchan Aruch, and then figure out how that plays out the Maisa. So the Tur, in the beginning of Gimel, says, how does one understand noy versus takrovis, right? Noy would be able to be batel and takrovis would not. So noy kigon shemadlik lepnia neros o shotach lepnia begadim bekelim noyim lenoy, right? That you put candles there, or you light some kind of candle, or you put clothing there to make it nice. The takrovis kol shekishiyotze bo karov al mizbeach kamo kol mine maichel kigon basar yenos, things that are brought on the Mizbeach, like food or like meat or wine, shmanim v'salsos mayim u'melach, oil, flour, water, and salt, im asim imenu takroves sheinichu lefaneha l'shem takroves, nesar miyad. So if it has become takroves, in the mere fact that you put in front of it as takroves, so those become prohibited immediately, afil lo asim imenu ke'en avodas pinim. So even if you didn't do it in the way of the avoda, I think it means our avoda, even if it was not done in the way that we do it, and just bringing those things to the avoda zara, that's going to be a violation. The gam lo hiktiru menu, that's going to label it as takrovis avoda zara. The gam lo hiktiru menu klum el nasu lefanel takrovis nasa zivchei mesim. And even if it wasn't brought up, it was just placed in front of it, that's already going to be considered takrovis avoda zara. It's something that's not brought, that we don't recognize. The only way then for it to be prohibited is if you do it like a zvicha, like shechting, like breaking, or like sprinkling that breaks up, right? Not just dropping a stick, as the Gemara said, but if you drop it in a way that it breaks into many pieces, or it's broken into multiple pieces. So that's going to be considered Zrika Mishberes. And it's the way of doing avoda for that thing, even if that's not exactly the way of doing the avoda for them. Right? So it's doing this thing is an avoda for that avoda zara, even though you're not necessarily doing it in the right way, that is the avoda for that avoda zara. So what's the example of that? So ketzad, avoda zara sh'over noso b'maka, right? So the avoda zara that you use the stick for, so perish mekashishin lefana b'maka, that you're supposed to shake the stick in front of it, v'shaver makal lefana, and you break the stick in front of it. So nesar, so you have prohibited that stick. Why? Sh'shviras ha'mekel dovel zvicha, because breaking the stick is like zvicha, is like shechting. In that you break the neck of an animal, right? So you've done an avoda that we do on behalf of an animal with a object that is useful for that avoda zara. Therefore, you've met the qualifications, the Rush's qualifications. Avalim ein ovdeno sabemakal klal. But if that avoda zara doesn't like sticks, right? It thinks sticks are dangerous. V'shaver hamakal lefen, and you break a stick in front of it. So l'nesar, so you haven't done anything. Right, you haven't prohibited the stick. The im avda bekashkush makal, and if you shake the stick, shehi derech avudasa chayiv, so you're chayiv avodazara velo nesar, but you haven't prohibited the stick because it's not considered takroves avodazara in that you didn't do any of the avodos of the of bringing it. So you have violated the din, or whoever is worshiping the avodazara has done the avodazara, but that's not doesn't qualify as takrovis avodah zara, so that doesn't sound so bad. No, you've done avodah zara, right? Avodah zara without a takrovis, right? You've used your body for avodah zara, so your body doesn't become aser ba'ana, right? It's avodah zara. Well, I don't know if that's such a great example.
Presuming that the avodah zara. Never mind. Go ahead.
Okay.
He still used his stick for avodah zara.
Yes, but it hasn't been makriv as avodah zara. It's not something that was given as a gift or destroyed on behalf of or deposited for.
Other category of noi?
No, it falls into as an you're an ovate of Avodah Zarah. Okay. You've done Avodah Zarah, but the stick is unimpacted.
It's like if you bow down, you did Avodah Zarah, but you yourself have not become.
You have not become a makor, right? You have not become a korban, yeah. I mean, you may have become a korban, but and so to anything that is done in the way of the avodah, the benim derech kavod or derech bizayim, ve'inu ke'in pinim chayav lo nesar. Whether it's way of honor or way of bizayon, ve'inu ke'in pinim chayav. So whatever you've done, but it's not like we do in our base hamikdash. You're chayav for doing the avodah zara, lo nesar. But you're not, but you haven't prohibited that object. But if you haven't actually done the stick avoda in the way that they do it, and there is no and it doesn't copy any of the avodas that we do in the Beis Hamikdash, right? So it doesn't you haven't violated the avoda zara, and the stick isn't aser, right? So if you throw a stick up in front of the avoda zara, so everybody's going to laugh at you and say, oh, you don't know what you're doing. So, yeah, you didn't know what you were doing. You haven't violated Avodah Zarah. And the stick is still permissible. There's nothing happened to the stick. Okay, so that is the qualifications of the tour. And it doesn't quote the Rush, the Feirish, but that seems to me to be the opinion of the Rush.
So, if you did something in front of this Avodah Zarah that was not part of their playbook, but was exactly what should have been done in the
Beit Mikdash. But copy something that was done in the Beit Mikdash. So, right, so that's like breaking the stick. Breaking the stick So you've done something that's done in the Beit Mikdash.
Yeah.
That's called Takrovis Avodah Zarah.
Okay.
But if you do, if it's something totally random, meaning you break, instead of breaking a stick, you break a football. I don't know.
I'm thinking it's something that you're doing exactly the way that it would have been done, whatever that might be. Exactly the way it might have been done in the Beit Hamikdash.
So,
but it isn't done.
So instead
isn't
of
done in there, in that,
so instead
that
of breaking an animal, instead of breaking a stick, you break an animal, which is done in the Beit Hamikdash. But that happens to be the god of vegetarian. That's the pita god, right? So you weren't supposed to do that. So I don't think that animal would qualify as being takrovis avodah zarah. Meaning a stick does, because a stick is in the parsha of avodah to that god, but the animal is not in the parsha of avodah to that god. Okay. So, if we turn to the Shulchan Aruch, so the Shulchan Aruch really quotes the Rush. I don't even know if there's any differences here. He gives the example of Noi. He gives the example of versus Takroves. So, Aval Davar She'in Mak. Okay, you know, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Shulchan Aruch paskins like that Rush. If one looks at the Shach, so the Shach adds in a Chumrah here, the Shach in Gimel adds in, Uchbeis Yosef, de la harambam im nimtza b'makum avudasa hakol asra afilu enu karval mizbeach. That anything found in the place of the avoda is considered asra even if it wasn't brought on the mizbeach. Right, so if anything is found in a base of Avodah Zarah, so that is automatically considered takrovis of Avodah Zarah. So the Shach seems to say that we should be choshesh for that. So anything, even if not, so where does he get that from? So we learned his source. I looked up the Rambam, and the Kesef Mishnah claims the source for the Rambam is that it says Beferish in the Gemara that anything that's hidden behind the curtain contained within Avodah Zarah is considered Takrovis Avodah Zarah.
So when I read that,
I thought that meant that you have an Avodah Zarah, in a corner, and it has a little curtain around it, and because it's being packed that way, and that's no. So the Rambam says no. Anything behind the curtain with Avodah Zarah means anything in the temple, anything in the church, anything in the place of Avodah Zarah. All that is going to be considered. That's not a small space. That could be a very large space, and all of that is going to be considered takrovis avodah zarah. So that would be chumrah. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rush, the way we just read, that it's this somewhat complicated thing of is it takroves? Is it using a subject that's subject to that avodah zarah? And have you done it in a way that would qualify as avodah in our base amigdash? Yeah. And if you have done that, so then you have A, accomplished avodah zarah, and B, you have accomplished takroves avodah zarah, or maybe you even haven't. I don't know, breaking the stick, actually, I'm not sure it's so clear that you've even violated the avodah zarah. Yeah, it doesn't say beferish that you've actually violated the avodah zarah by breaking it. I guess that would be subject to whatever those that avodah zarah paskins. But you have...
Not breaking a stick is like shita.
We say it's like shchita, so we would qualify it as being takrovos avodah zarah from our perspective. But have you violated avodah zarah though? I don't know. It doesn't say it beferish. I assume the assumption seems to be yes, but I don't know. It doesn't say. It just says that object has become takrovos avodah zarah. Okay.
The shrock is saying that anything that's found there around the avodah zarah, regardless of the way it got there, regardless of what happened with it?
Yeah, so then there's that's an additional chumrah, right? But that's not quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. That's only quoted in the Shach. Okay. And perhaps that would actually not be nari chumrah in the famous Shetel controversy. So in the Shetel controversy, so there is. I was looking around. I couldn't find that much. I was surprisingly couldn't find that much other than like chat rooms on the Yeshiva world and things like that. There's an article that was written by Rabbi Josh Fluke, a friend of mine in. He's now in Boca Raton. At that time, he was in Kol Elyon at YU. So he wrote an article for the RJJ Journal. And then I found today, while searching around, someone put together every possible psak that he could get his hands on. Any tshuva, any psak, any kol kore. And I printed out and I forgot it at home. All right, anything that he could get his hands on, he published and put on a website. So in chronological order. So there's about 50 entries. Vili Guzman, without exaggeration, it's probably about 50 entries that this person put together, starting with the tshuva that you have in front of you, and concluding with this 8-page thing that was published a year ago, which was reviewed, which represents the perspective of Rav Yisrael Belsky. So one can look there and find all that you want to see, some, most in Hebrew, some in English. It's like a Columbia web address or something. Columbia domain. Don't know who the person is that put it together, but he made our job.
Rabbi Velti is the latest.
Rabbi Velti is the latest thing on his list.
On his list, and Rabbi Yashiv is the
This is the first thing on that list.
Right, and is there a substantial difference between the two of them?
Actually, no. But Rabbi Yashiv changed his mind. That's where the whole controversy started. But hold on. Okay, so the 2004 was the announcement that came out from Rav Yashiv. Rav Yashiv felt that the human hair, which comes from Tirupati, India, should be considered Tikrovus of avodah zarah, and therefore would be Asur Bahana. Right? That led to a major, some may recall, maybe even seeing videos of people like burning wigs in the street and people grabbing things and urging everyone to, you know, cut out your wig. Now burning is not such a dumb thing to do, because there is an idea of burning of avodah zarah. That concept does exist. We'll get to it over our learning of Hilchos avodah zarah. So it's not this crazy, it's not so crazy to say that they burnt it, but it was somewhat a very fast reaction, as we'll see. So there is, what happened is that there is this temple in Tirupati, India, that's visited by 40,000 to 60,000 people per day. I can't get over that number. 40,000 to 60,000 people per day. For many of them, it includes shaving of their hair. To accommodate the needs of all of these pilgrims, this temple employs 600 barbers to cut the hair of 15,000 to 20,000 pilgrims on a daily basis. So only one-third of the visitors are actually getting their hair cut. The haircut is cut in a four-story building in close proximity to the temple. In fact, in this article, he has a map of the temple compound over here. So it is cut in a separate building. The hair never enters the temple, but instead is placed in a vessel called a hundi. The hair is then brought to a temple warehouse and sold at auction to wholesalers and then to distribute to distribute the hair to those in the wig-making industry. The permissibility of the wigs that may have hair that originated from the Indian temple raises several questions. What is the act itself of shaving, is that considered idol worship? If it is an act of idol worship, what is the status of the hair? And to what extent does one have to be concerned that the hair in their particular wig actually came from this temple? Right? So is the shaving considered takrovis?
Because that's the only place where this is done?
No.
No. So then that is
it's not the only thing. It's not the only place to get hair from in India,
but in an avodah zara, Dick.
Is the only Avodah Zara source of hair from India. I wouldn't even say it's not necessarily Avodah Zara. It's the only possibility of Avodah Zara coming out of India, but it is not the only source of hair from India. But when you're dealing with Avodah Zara, there may be a problem that it's not batal, meaning you have to be choshed. So that is also a concern. But one thing at a time. Discovery of this temple, which is a source for all this hair, did not all of a sudden become news in 2004. This was known about for many years, and the first tshuva was written by Rav Eliashiv in Tafshin Nun, which is in front of you, Simen Ayin Zayin. Tafshin Nun would be in 1989. Oh, I thought it was earlier. Okay. So in 1989 tshuva. So he is asked the following. So now on the page in front of you, right, I kind of, I wanted to get onto two pages. So it starts over here, right? It goes to the back, and then the top of the page is the end of the tshuva. Okay? So we don't have to go through, not necessarily going to go through the whole thing, but Rav Eliashiv in 1989 mattered for four reasons that he lists here. So Adasa She'eli Mutter Lihishtami Shepeos Nachrios Hasius Misarosem Shel Ovli Alilim Hagerim Behodu. Right, the permissibility of using the hairs of non-Jews, that the hair comes from the house of Avodah Zarah that live in India. They shave it for their Avodah Zarah. Or if there's no prohibition of Takrovis Avodah Zarah, or if there is not by them a prohibition of Takrovis Avodah Zarah, and it's Asur Bahana. So he says, Vadai etzem ha-she'ila tali b'mitzias. Right, the main issue in this is trying to figure out what the facts are. Be'eza ofenim osim zos. In what way are they doing this? Amnam ksavrav tzirif lemechtavo. Not sure what that is. Shel echad hayadua kemumcha hachi gadol binyane hodu doctor something. Right, so I talked to this person who is an expert in things going on in India. Here I have another page, Sheldon, if you want. That's the original. Whatever. Yeah. So lefi dvarav nesinas hasaros inam begeder korban ela geder nedava. That the giving of the hair is not a korban, but rather it is a nedava. V'in ira li echad ezet tzara o simcha noder davar chashuv lavodah zarah. So if they have a difficult time or a happy occasion, so they want to give something chashuv to the avodah zarah. So you could give gold, you could give silver, they could give their hair. So lefi chukei ha-Hindu, asur lenashim legaleach saros roshin ki'im ba'ofen zeh. And according to Hindu practice, it is prohibited for women to shave other than in this fashion. Saros etzlan davar chashuv, right? Their hair is considered chashuv. Hu hosif ki ha-saros davar tamehu, lefi ha-Hindu, v'asur lehem lahachni saros leves avodah zarah. So, and the hair is considered something tameh, and it actually is prohibited to be brought into the base of Avodah Zarah. So that hair is not going into the church. So that shach with the Rambam is not an issue. Right? V'heim mistaprim michutz.
The father hair is not allowed to go into the
hair. No, it's cut in this separate building. Which if you want, you could find videos of on YouTube.
Okay.
So, v'heim mistaprim michutz lebeis Avodah Zarah. So they shave outside of the actual temple. But it is owned by the Avodah Zarah. And the temple sets up hair cutters outside of the temple. They're the ones that cut the hair. Uzman hakodem lo ayu nostim saros lechomrei batei alilim ela hayu zorkenos sam la'ashba. So back in the day, they didn't used to give it to anybody. They just cut their hair and threw it in the garbage. Right? Rak bizman ha'achron lokei chamenahel shabeis avodazor es ha'saros umokhul esokhrim. Right? Then after a while, they realized there might be some money to be made, and then they started getting involved with selling the hair to wholesalers. Right? Ha'saros me'olam lo machnisim leveis avodazor ki ka'amorhim davar tamei etzlam. So the hair, again, never goes in because it's davar tamei. Elu ha'mistaprim b'chlal in lehem inyan b'zeh. Lein holchos hasaros ha'ikar etzlam legalei hasarosim b'shetach hakar lebeis avodazara zet tochin dvar. Right, they, and the haircutters don't have any stake in it. They just want to cut the hair close to avodazara. Right, and that's the essence of the stuff. So v'inei. So that's the metzias, at least the way it was understood in 1989. So vinei kaimelam b'yordei asimun kuflam atesef beis davar she'ein makriven menu b'fnim enu nesem b'dinta krovis elim kein asim menu kein zvicha o kein zvicha hamishtaveres. So something that is not actually brought inside is not considered prohibited unless you make it kein zvicha o kein zvicha hamishtaveres. Right, either that you shechting it, something you're breaking something, or like a sprinkling something that breaks. So who derech la'avod ba'osu davar afa b'she'ein derech la'avod ba zeh ha'inyan. Right, and it has to be a way of doing that avodah zara. It has to be shayach to that avodah zara, even though that's not necessarily the way of worshiping that avodah zara. Ketzad, so avodah zara she'ovdem osah shemekashkim lifnei the mekel, right on the back of the page that you with the stick v'shiver mekel lifnei nes lifana, and you break the stick nes v'zeh she'shvir samekel dom lezvicha aval im ein ovdem osah mekel klal ein ochay v'lo nesa. So lefi arm based on what we said, ein ovdem avodah zara shelam bakrav osaros klal. There's no avoda with this avodah zara having to do with hair at all, right? That's not part of the avodah zara. It's v'im kein gam im haya mischavin hamiskaleach lavu bazeh es avodah zara shelo akasi lo nesar v'chiniskaleach. So if so, even if the person shaving thought that they were worshiping the avodah zara in that way, akasi lo nesar, right? It still hasn't become prohibited because they're doing the avodah zara in the wrong way. Right, these halachos in Yeridaya is not just talking about the way the Jews doing these things, but even non-Jews doing these things. So they're not. That's not the avodah. This avodah zara doesn't appreciate hair at all. This avodah zara might appreciate bald people, right? Mm-hmm. But doesn't appreciate the hair at all.
But only one third of the folks that are going to this avodah zara place are even following this, right? Because it's only about one third of
Only one third are cutting, yeah. But we don't.
One third are getting there.
The other two thirds are not.
Yeah, the two thirds don't care.
No, but the other two thirds are not relevant to the conversation.
Well, they are.
I think what he's saying is that by virtue of the fact that some people can do their voter without cutting their hair. And maybe it's not.
Well, those other two thirds are not necessarily doing this avoda. I mean, there might be the way to claim that it's prohibited is to say that some people can cut their hair and other people don't cut their hair, but they offer tobacco.
So this practice is not shy of to any kind of avoda.
So their claim is that the hair, the hair as being something that was broken off and offered, right, is not shy of to being avoda. That's the original claim here. And he says in the Megalchim, they know Yodim Shasaros Hochem LaAshva Odim LeMeschar, and they know that it's being put in the garbage and it's being sold, and therefore the haircutters. I mean, again, there's two aspects to the avodah zara, and that's actually what he gets involved with here. Right, when somebody gets their, this is a general issue in halacha. Right, if somebody gets a haircut, and let's say it gets cut in the wrong way, so who has violated the din? Right, if somebody cuts off someone else's payas. Right, so who's violated the din? Right, the person or the haircutter, right, or both or neither, right? Maybe it's only a problem if you do it yourself, right? So that's what he gets involved with here. That even if the person themselves might think is a avodah zara, it might only matter what the megaleach, what the barber is thinking, right? If it's okay, fine. So that's that section. He ends up here as summarized here by Rabbi Flug. There are right. That's issue number two. Is that even if the person assumes that they are worshiping avodah zara, it's the barber that actually matters. Third, the Gemara implies the breaking of the stick is not done in the presence of the idol. The stick would not be considered the kodesh avodah zarah. I mean, the only context that the Gemara talks about breaking the stick is when it's in front of the avodah zarah, and here it's not taking place in front of the avodah zarah. And then fourth, that we could actually see inside. The uvalav kol hanimid, the last little two lines on the page that has no gaps. Right, the last paragraph, the uvalav kol hanimid, with all these things, l'fiya mumcha, according to the expert I spoke to, or someone spoke to, ein b'maisa ha-tiglachas shum srach shal avodah zarah. The hair kind of thing to do with avodah zarah. Shal avodah, avodah, ein shum srach shal avodah, avodah le-avodah zarah. Avodas, avodah, okay. Ella honey ovdei elilim, rak marim b'maisa ha-tiglachas, except for these idol worshippers, rak marim b'maisa ha-tiglachas ad kamehim adukim avodah zarah v'shem uchanim l'hashkis v'avid esay akar lehem b'iglalam. It's the people that are worshiping, it's their way of purifying themselves to do whatever they're going to do. But there's nothing, but the hair itself has nothing to do with the avodah zarah. All this is based on the expert I spoke to. He says that you might realize I don't necessarily have in my power to figure out exactly all the mitzvahs. And like figure out all the problems with the, like to answer up all of the shilas on the avodah zarah are not doing. Right, and this is, if this is the way it is, so that's the way, this is all assumed that that's the way that things are, and that's the Shuvah of 1989 from Rav Eliashiv. Yes. So
he's saying that the worshippers are showing their dearness for the idol by doing this, but it really has no. The answer has no mamashis for the worship itself.
Well, even if that is considered a super duper way of doing the avoda, it's only themselves that's doing the avoda. The hair is being removed, right from them. So the hair has nothing to do with the avoda zara. It's their baldness that is the that is the avoda for the avoda zara. They're in a way sacrificing / purifying themselves, not necessarily doing things for there. So that was the 1989 tshuva. This apparently at the time, he quotes that Rav Moshe Feinstein signed on, but Rav Moshe Feinstein was not alive in 1989. But apparently Rav Moshe knew about it, Shlomo Zalman knew about it, he quotes with Tovia Goldstein who knew about it. They all had problems with it. Apparently Rav Moshe Sternbach, this I looked up, usually Rav Moshe Sternbach's tshuvas and tshuvas ha-gadolos are about 3 paragraphs long. This one was about 12 pages long. So I was not able to make it through the entire thing. Rav Moshe Sternbach in tshuvas van Hagos held in 1989 that it was prohibited, or I didn't look at the date of that tshuva. But held originally that it was that the hair was prohibited. Yes, he was under the assumption that the hair was burned as an offering. I don't know where he got that from, but he also adds in that he also asserted based on the Shach, that the student's opinion that anything brought as a gift is considered tikrovas l'avodah zarah, this here should be treated as tikrovas l'avodah zarah. That just because, but again, that might be a disagreement with regard to the. So then what changed? So in 2004, someone named Rav Aaron Dunner went out to Tirupati at the behest of Rav Eliashiv. Went out to Tirupati to examine the practice and to interview some of the worshippers. Now, this those that know Rabbi K, who works for the temple, works at temple. So his Rav Aaron Dunner is a rav in Britain. That's actually his family rabbi. He had conversations with him about this, although he said he didn't have anything more than what would be available on the various websites. But apparently he went out to India, and Rabbi K told me that actually dressed up as an Indian, meaning, I don't know if that's the right way to call them, dressed up as a worshiper. He has a big guy, he has a gray beard, and to talk to people, he didn't want to look like an Orthodox rabbi asking questions, but actually Mamish went undercover to find out all of these things, and upon investigation, found out the following 6 things. Number one, the worshippers claim that the reason why they are cutting their hair is because the idol likes hair. I mean, the people think that they're actually cutting it and offering it as a korban. They didn't say anything about self-sacrifice. They just thought they were offering the korban. When asked why they only cut part of their hair, they answered that the least one can do is cut part of their hair. This was interpreted to mean that the purpose is not to bald oneself, but to give their hair to an idol. Two, the worshippers did not consider the hair to be impure. In fact, some of the worshippers even brought hair into the temple and nobody stopped them. Three, when the barbers were asked about their intentions, they responded that they have in mind to do whatever the customer has in mind. So the customer has in mind that it's for Avodah Zarah, so the barber is willing to cut it l'shem Avodah Zarah. Four, the worshippers were asked why they specifically come to Tirupati to receive a haircut and do not cut their hair at home. They responded that this place has a connection to the idol. Five, the worshippers at the time of the haircut recite the name of the idol. And six, the building that houses the barbershops has an idol in the lobby. Additionally, one is prohibited from wearing shoes in the barbershop. So if these claims are all correct, right, so that changes a significant amount of the metzias, right? Number one, it's not, one can make a case that that place where they're cutting it is a temple. Number two, the people are clearly thinking that it has to do with the offering of Avodah Zarah. And the barbers also perhaps think that it has to do with the offering of Avodah Zarah. So based on that, Rav Yashuv wrote a little letter, which one could find online. It's about six lines long and very difficult to read script, where he says that based on this, all of the... he didn't write it, wrote this Rav Yosef Efrati, who is his gabbai, wrote it, that based on this, all of these things are now considered takruvi Avodah Zarah, and therefore are asur bahana. So that led to chaos, and led to about 20 or 30 different organizations coming out with their own psakim on the issue. So most of them originally start out being be'isser. So there is I found online a kol kore from Rav Wozner and written by somebody else in B'nai Brak that said on it, it had three things. Number one was you should not buy wigs using Indian hair. Two, if you have a chashash that it has, if you already own something that has Indian hair, hold on to it for a little bit until we can revire all the facts. And number three, this ad takes no position on whether it's appropriate to be wearing wigs in the first place. This is only for those people that have already asked their rav and come and gotten permission to cover that the women are permitted to cover their hair in that matter. So that there is other that seemed to be the theme of the osrim. That seemed to be the theme of those that asered, that there perhaps were some Knayim that went around quickly burning it, but it seemed like most were assuming that let's just hold on for a second and be mevar all of the facts. So there were those who held that it was mutter. Most prominently, as far as I can tell, it seems I didn't find it online, but there is a journal, Or Yisrael, that seemed to have several articles on why it might be permissible. Rav Menashe Klein is among those that is that holds that it is mutter, and Rav Belsky was amongst those that it was mutter. And their main thinking was that... that regardless what the people think, the priests still hold like the metzias that Rav Yashuv was going by. That the people might think what they think, but the priests hold what the priests hold, and then you have a very interesting question about who is koveya, what is the actual avoda, who decides? So do the priests,
which is a question from the beginning,
right? So the assumption seems to be that all these people are doing it. So that seems to be the assumption that these poskim have. Well, that they're not doing it right, and clearly from the Gemara the Gemara talks about people doing avodah zarah in the wrong way. So who is koveya? What is the right way? So obviously the experts are the ones that are koveya, the ones that know, the priests, etc. They're the ones that are koveya as being the right way. Mm-hmm. So after a while, I'm thinking about this. Really? I mean, how long does it take for somebody to come... At what point does somebody come up with their own Avodah Zarah? Right? At what point, guys... Well, so the Hamunam, the masses and masses and masses of people that all assume that a different way is doing the Avodah Zarah, so maybe that's, you know, Hinduism, you know, 2.0. I don't know. It's a different version. At what point does it become not the wrong way of doing it, but the right way for a segment of people to be worshipping that Avodah Zarah? That was a overall question that I have. So that is that seemed to be the main issue. There are other other sources, but that was the main issue. That the metzias really is like that they had originally, And even if the people are saying it's for avodah zarah, they're not necessarily, it's not necessarily the case. And just because there's an idol in the temple doesn't necessarily mean that it's base of avodah zarah. And just because it's within the compound of the avodah zarah doesn't necessarily make it the temple of avodah zarah. And you know, that's the yesterday I was at the Ben Franklin Museum, and they have a Treasures of the Vatican exhibit that's there for another couple of months.
Oh, really?
So I am not advocating going. Actually, probably is usher to go. Not knowing the facts yet, but just knowing what it probably is. But there was in the lobby a very large rendition in Lego of St. Peter's Basilica, right? Is that, that's the main, right? St. Peter's Basilica is the main basilica with the courtyard in front, right? With the big courtyard in front with all sorts of interesting Lego people wandering around the wandering around the courtyard in front. So, right, so the point is this is a not a combo, a conglomeration, whatever the term is that they use, of combining the Lego exhibit and and the Treasures of the Vatican exhibit. So you put the two.
It's on exhibit cost.
Right. So what if I think most assume that those that visit the Vatican, most assume that they would not walk into St. Peter's Basilica. All right. There's a whole shaila about going into Sistine Chapels. Maybe we'll get to that as we learn ahead. But I don't think anybody says that it's prohibited to go into that courtyard. I don't know. I'm not an expert, but I don't think anybody says it's prohibited to go into that courtyard. What if the Catholics had a rule that when you go into that courtyard, you have to take off your shoes? I don't know if that would change anything. I'm not sure what it's koveya, meaning when Pope Francis goes out and says everybody and waves out to the courtyard and says you should all pray for me. So is that then koveya? I don't know. I don't know how you figure out what is a church and what is. Does that mean that the entire Ben Franklin Parkway is now a church because they decided to claim for it to be a church? Probably not, right? So okay. Anyway, so that is the issue. Just to continue with a few more details. So we pointed out. So here in this article, in the Halacha Brura article from Rubelsky. So it discusses what is the mitzvah. So they point out that there's two reasons why one would lie about what the facts are. So if you go to some websites, originally someone claimed that 80% of the hair that comes from India is coming from this temple. So
how do they
could know.
I'm just wondering about the rabbi who went there, how he talked to them, what language.
People know English. Yeah. All right, go get an interpreter. Look, there are Hindus around the world that are traveling there. They probably have signs in Hebrew also. You probably talk to people in Hebrew there too. So they claim 80%. So then they point out that number could very well be expanded because it's in the interest, the government or wherever they got this number from, it was in the interest to make larger the amount of hair coming from his temple, because maybe the fact that it came from a temple and was therefore blessed maybe ups the value of the hair, and therefore they want to make it seem like more hair is coming to the... So then when they realized that, no, saying that hair is coming from the temple actually makes it much, much less valuable, so then maybe they're motivated to change the number in another way. But the facts are that, at least, I don't know, the facts are that he puts out here, that India exports, during the year, over 1,100 tons of hair. That's incredible. 1,100 tons of hair annually, which can be used for wig making. The Tirupati temple, which is the largest temple where tonsures are performed, sells only about 140 tons. So of the 1,100 tons that's being exported, 140 tons of that is actually coming from this temple. This hair is used in the production of hair products such as wigs, toupees, and hair extensions. The hair that the temple sells for the production of these products is considered Remi hair, since hair... Okay, and then you get to, there's two different types of hair. So only 10% of the hair from India is coming from this temple. In addition to that, most of that hair is going to China. China apparently imports 660 tons of hair. The hair that's going to China is not turning into wigs that are sold in the streets of Mea Shearim. Right? The hair that's being sent to China is being used in other places throughout the world. Or you being used as hair extensions or things like that are generally not what's being used for this here. So as one started going through the facts, one started realizing the following, right? What is mesupik about whether that hair? What, we are still mesupik about whether that hair is actually a avodah zara. Second of all, that hair gets swallowed up into the majority of hair that's coming out of India. Most of the hair in India is going to China and not ending up in the streets of Mea Shearim and Bnei Brak, or certainly not in Brooklyn or Flatbush or Chassar Shalom in the Five Towns. Right, that's not happening. And then an additional chashash, I saw this in the Kol Kori that came out of Gateshead, is that you have to be concerned about European hair shaykhs also, because it's been known that they've been known to swap. So that is not going to happen that much, he says, for two reasons. Number one is a lot of them are not black hair colored shaykhs, and they're blonde hair colored shaykhs, so they're not going to be put in. And the hair that's coming from these places are much darker than any Jew would have. Jews would have lighter, dark hair than even Jewish brunettes. Their hair would not be as dark as the hair in India that would be coming from this temple. So, and they could dye it. They would maybe dye it. It would be cheaper. They'd be able to save money. So he says here that it's true that hair is dyed, but you wouldn't dye that hair. You would dye other types of hair. And this part, you got to get deeper into the article to figure out why exactly that is. So Ravelsky, at least this article, based on the Psak of Ravelsky, he thought that it's that when the dust settles, it's not it shouldn't be a problem. Now there is one issue which we will get to either next week or the week after. Yeah.
The only 10% of the hair comes from the idol. It was really a crevice, but would it be bottle?
So the issue of bottle, right? So we've come across this, and then we had it in Kuf Yud when learning Taruvus, and then we didn't cover it when we learned Dain Nesaf, but not to worry, it shows up again in Kuf Mem. And there is a possibility that anything of Avodah Zarah related is never bottle.
Now, yeah, it's a Suffolk. I thought if you could put it together that it's a suffix of whether the hair is actually the avodah zarah.
Where's the suffix?
The suffix is whether the cutting of the hair is actually part of the avodah zarah.
Okay, so that whether is that it's unclear whether that would really be considered a suffix in the pure sense, because what we usually call a suffix is a something shows up on the street and we don't know where it comes from. There's no label, there's no way of figuring it out. Mm-hmm. That is suffix, what we call a chisaron in yediyah. I mean, we just don't know the facts. So get your facts straight. Right? So we don't necessarily call that a suffix that one could be makel on. That's an issue. But even beyond that, let's say even if it is a avodah zarah, if you were to lo yitzur that it would be considered aser, so does that stuff get batel? So that ends up being a machlokas between the Machaber and the Ramah, and the Ramah, Mikl. We'll learn that in the next couple of weeks. That one probably has the right to rely on the Ramah / the Shach and be Mikl on that particular shail. At least to refrain from burning one's hair, at least to refrain from throwing it out. Whether one should rely on the Ramah lechatchila when one is out purchasing a new wig. So again, we'll have to get to that a little bit later. Okay, so it seems I'm not sure, but it seems that when the dust settled, at least in this country, I don't think there are too many women that were getting rid of their hair, getting rid of their wigs, and it seems like even in Eretz Yisrael. From what I could tell, people were able to be mavar most of the facts to come out in favor of that it's probably mother to keep them. But that was the I wanted to get
so,
to the
so we,
the suffix the bottle issue.
Get a shadow. Do they tell you where the hair came from, or did they tell you where the shadow was assembled?
They, I